When we hear a reading from the book of Deuteronomy, our first reaction is to dismiss it. For many of us, the laws of the Old Testament feel archaic, or they don't seem to have a place in our lives today. And to some extent, I would agree with you. There are many laws of the Old Testament that really don't have relevance today, because they were meant for a very specific time period. For instance, the laws in Deuteronomy that divide up the land of Israel into the 12 historic nations for the 12 tribes, that doesn't make sense to us. The exchange of land between one tribe and another and the laws governing that really don't make sense to us. Even the dietary laws, for the most sense, don't make a lot of sense to us. Why can't we eat pigs? Bacon's a wonderful thing. And I'm sure many of you are very disappointed that the laws forbid sea slugs, that you can't eat a sea slug. But that's okay, we move on. Nevertheless, there is a point to the laws of the Old Testament, and the foundation that underlies them is still in full effect. And that's the foundation we really need to spend time with. So already in our first reading from the book of Deuteronomy, we have the first main point of the laws of the Old Testament, and that is to show God's justice to the world. We forget that the laws of the Old Testament were meant for that reason, that the nations of the world would look at Israel and go, man, they're weird. They don't eat pork. What's wrong with them? They have to wash all these different things and be careful with what they eat? This is very weird. What's wrong with them? Their first reaction would be to be like, you're weird, we're leaving you alone. But then as they spend time watching how it all works itself out, they realize how blessed that land was. This tiny parcel of land that between all these massive nations somehow survived, that these people who had all these very strange laws multiplied endlessly and had flocks and herds in great numbers, which made the nations pay attention. What's different about them? Why should we follow their laws? Ah, because they're God's laws who has blessed them. That was the first main point of the laws, to show God's justice to the world. The second point of the laws was to help the people out, that they would be good for them. The dietary laws did lead to be more healthy. The laws of justice about how to adjudicate the laws of Israel did help prevent conflict. These were necessary for the people that they may live justly. And so the laws were meant to do that. They're meant to help everyone live in peace and justice. The third one is the one we don't like. The laws, as we see them working out through the Old Testament, had one final point, and it's kind of subtle. It was so that they would be obedient to God. Some of the laws were just weird, and the reason for that was they would actually do what God asked. For instance, the meeting tent that they had in the desert and in the temple had exceptionally specific rules as to how you set it up, and that was so that it wasn't their choice, it was God's choice. So in the midst of this foundation, we have all these laws that govern the people to help them show God's salvation, to live rightly and justly, and to choose God above everything else. It didn't work. I'll be very blunt. They fought them heavily. And what ended up happening was something very different. The Jewish rabbis believed that God's law was absolutely perfect. There was no flaw in any way the law was worded throughout the entirety of the Old Testament, to the point where they believe that even the repetition of something was not so that we would memorize it, but that each repetition meant something else. For instance, the law that forbade a person to boil a child in its mother's milk was repeated 3 times in Deuteronomy. The first time the rabbi said, ah, this is what it means. It means you can't have dairy and meat together. So no hamburger, cheeseburgers, sorry. The second time it was repeated, it had a new meaning, which means that you can't cook meat and cheese in the same dish. You had to have separate pots for meat, separate pots for dairy, separate pots for grain, and they never exchanged. You set them aside for that specific food group. The third interpretation was you can't kill a calf, before it's weaned from its mother. That's the one that actually makes sense. You want the calf to survive, so don't kill the mother before the calf is ready to be on its own. But because it repeated 3 times, the rabbi said, God doesn't repeat himself, therefore we have to come up with a new interpretation. The same thing worked with sabbatical laws. The laws of the Sabbath forbade you to walk more than 100 steps on the Sabbath, which makes this funny image, because you think of these poor people who walked 100 steps out and they're stuck They can't move until nightfall. Then they can go home again. So you have all these people just wandering out in the field, and they just stand there for the rest of the day. These are the laws that then Jesus describes later. That as all this unfolds, we get to the New Testament. Now, the issue we have with the New Testament is, what do we do with those laws of the Old Testament? There are 613 laws, but we don't really follow them today. We don't follow all of them as described and indicated by our first reading from Deuteronomy. So what happened? Well, it gets even more complicated when we take Jesus at his word. He said, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. So according to Jesus, the law is still in full effect. But why don't we follow it? The answer is very simple, and it comes from our gospel. So what's happening in our gospel for today is Jesus is eating a meal with some Pharisees and scribes. Okay? And the issue is he came with unclean or unwashed hands. That does not mean his hands were dirty and he didn't wash them before the meal. That is not what's going on. So please still keep washing your hands. Jesus did not say stop washing hands. What he's saying is what used to happen before a especially sacrificial meal, but any major meal, is you'd have to be ritually clean. Which means you had to wash yourself with water and you had to wait till sunset and then you are ritually clean. And that was a process of purification to get ready for a meal, especially a sacrificial meal. Without doing so, you cannot eat the sacrifice. So they're watching and going, he's not following the tradition of the elders. And the answer to it is very simple. What did Jesus do? He purified everyone. The laws of the Old Testament were to help people live a pure life, that they would be ready for God, that they would have that interior and exterior disposition to be able to receive him fully. What happened? The exact opposite, as Isaiah foretold. So Jesus, coming, purified the entire world through the blood of his sacrifice. He was able to overcome what was necessary in the old law to allow us to be ritually pure before God, to allow us to be right and in right relationship with God. He allowed us to come before God in a new way, which means the purity laws of the Old Testament no longer make sense. Jesus has already purified us through the blood of his sacrifice. So he didn't have to wash. His disciples didn't have to wash. They were already ritually clean because of Jesus. In that same vein, we need to go through the Old Testament and see those laws being fulfilled. That why don't we eat, or why don't we Why aren't we forbidden to eat pork? Because all foods are now clean, because Jesus cleansed the whole world. So you can go eat your sea slug now if you want. You can go have your bacon with it if you wish. We now are in a different era in which God has ritually cleaned the entirety of the world. Now this is an important starting point for us too, because that also means the effects of the laws are still in place. And imagine with me for a moment this. What if the entire Catholic Church were to follow God's laws so perfectly that the other people of the world would look at us and say, there's something different about you. There's something that I want. Realistically, we have the exact opposite. Man, that church is corrupt. Look at all the problems they have. Why would I ever want to be a part of it? But again, that's because laws are not followed. If we were to really live what God intended for us and be this avenue of grace to the world, that there be new life in us, a life that people want, then they would look to us and say, man, they've got something that I want too. Because again, the laws are still in effect. They still challenge us to make God present to the world. They still challenge us to live in such a way that people look to us and say, they have a different life. They have something different about them. And then for us to live in that freedom that God intends, that we can live boldly and courageously in this life, and be bold about our witness to God himself. That's part of it too. But there's one more part. This was what Jesus did that was so foundational. Where the old laws required an individual purity or a societal purity, that everyone kind of did what was right, the new laws have grace and mercy. And that's far more important than absolute adherence to law. Because grace and mercy show God more fully than if we just said, look at me and how good I am at following laws. So that means for us today, if we really wanted to show the world the grace and grandeur of God, we need to be instruments of mercy, instruments of his grace, letting it flow through us into the world and transform it as God has transformed us. So as James tells us today, let us not just be hearers of the word, as though the laws come in our head, rattle around, and leave again, but doers of the word, that we hear the words of Jesus, we hear the profoundness of the gospel message, and try to conform our lives to it, being avenues of his grace, instruments of God's mercy, microcosms of the wonder and grandeur of God being worked out into the entire world.